Bob Moonley, how are you, sir?
I'm really good.
Thank you so much. You're like 8 levels above me, and I just think it's great that you're here.
Well, it's great to be here. It's always fun to have a chance to talk to developers and see what's going on.
You guys had a pretty cool opening today at Microsoft PDC. It's all about the cloud. I actually walked through one of the Azure boxes that's just sitting right over there.
I just did too. I had actually not seen this box. What we have is a container here on the floor. And basically, this is using some of the new technology that Microsoft Research has been building to provide very, very low energy usage cooling of a container full of, I think it's like 1,500 servers.
Yeah.
And we're able to get the power usage significantly down by incorporating this it's actually a water-based cooling technology. It's
very cool. And it was interesting. I talked to one of the architects over there, and he said he's water cooling that giant container with a garden hose.
That's right, 2 gallons a minute. And they said that it would work just as well in Dubai, in the desert in Dubai. In fact, they like that sort of desert condition because it's very dry there.
Really?
And I was asking the question why, you know, it's essentially, I mean, I for those of us who've been around for a while, it's a swamp cooler, essentially.
It's funny that you said that, because that's exactly what I thought when you
showed
it to me.
I never thought of those as working all that well.
Yeah.
And this works great, and I wonder if maybe we should all be cooling our houses with these things.
I made the mistake of calling it a poor man's air conditioner, and the man was kind of straightened up a little bit and started to explain to me the science behind it. It was really quite both sophisticated and very ancient. He said that this was something that the Romans used.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he likes the description swamp cooler.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Right. Well, the point was that there's fewer moving parts, fewer water, and a better
amount of water. Yeah, and the key is less electricity. I mean, one of the things about these data centers and the amount of electricity they use, you actually have thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of servers. Anything we can do to save the amount of power consumed by working, first of all, to get the utilization of the machines up. I mean, that's one of the things we do with Windows, Azure, and virtualization. Mm-hmm. And then also just having everything else be as low energy usage as possible.
Wasn't it a guy from IBM about 50 years ago that said that there'd be a market in the world for like at most
five or six computers?
Doesn't it seem like that's happening? I mean, you talked about kind of generationally what's going on.
Well, you know, I don't think so.
Do you think of it as a computer?
Well, technically, of course, it's thousands and thousands of computers that are connected together. And no, I really don't think so. I think we'll always have many, many organizations that will run their own data centers. Mm-hmm. So they'll have their computers on premises. And then we have hosters, thousands of hosters around the world that we work with that will also run their own data centers. And then there'll be a number of really large providers like Microsoft that will run these massive cloud systems. But I really think you'll still see that variety.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you're just joining us, we've been sitting down with Bob Moonley, and you can tweet questions to him at CH9Live on Twitter, and we'll bring those up on the big screen here to ask questions about cloud computing and the things that you have been talking about. One of the things that I thought was most interesting about Windows Azure is that the programming model is like almost amazingly familiar. I mean, it's Visual Studio. There's nothing kind of between me and the cloud. I mean, I can just write my regular ASP.NET application and I can put it on Azure, or I can use some of the specific APIs and talk to Azure if I want to.
Yeah, I think one of the key things we've tried to do is make it very consistent with people who know how to build Windows Server applications, IIS applications, middle tier things. Make it so that the Windows Azure environment is very consistent with that. People can take their investments they have forward into the cloud environment. On the other hand, and this was essentially the core premise of my talk, the cloud is a next generation application model, mm-hmm. and there are new things that you want to take advantage of, for example, to take advantage of elasticity and scale out, federation, things like identity federation, the work that's going on with modeling. I mean, all of those are examples where the programming model or the application model that the cloud brings offers a new set of services for developers to take advantage of if it's appropriate for them to do so.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that was interesting, I was talking to one of the architects over there in Azure, and he was saying that this is the first time that you're really able to really monetize and figure out what total cost of ownership means. Because as someone who worked in enterprise architecture at banks before I came to Microsoft, we would have the meetings with the presidents where we talk about dollars.
Right.
And then we'd have the meetings with the programmers about how we were going to architect this. But there was kind of it wasn't a direct connection. If I architect it this way, it will cost this many number of dollars.
That's right. And now it'll be a lot clearer, I think, in that sense. And it'll allow customers to really understand the actual cost of running their applications and the implications of decisions they make. So you can, for example, say, hey, we're going to introduce this new feature, and it puts more resource loads on the servers. Is that feature actually providing a return on investment. You can see what the actual cost is and hopefully monitor how much revenue you'll be able to get through the introduction of that feature and be able to make good business decisions.
Yeah, he actually gave an example where someone could have a multi-tiered application and they could maybe write something poorly on the business tier,
right.
But because of the elasticity, I could go and turn it up.
Right.
But of course, it'll cost me a little bit more.
So sure, and maybe that's a good trade-off. I mean, you may do some things that are compute heavy and it's an appropriate business trade-off. Other times, you'll do things and recognize that developers maybe haven't been as effective and efficient in writing the code as they otherwise could be, and people can come in and just optimize and lower cost of running it just by improving the quality of the code.
Mm-hmm. We've got some questions that are coming in from Twitter here. We got one from Elijah Manor who's talking about out-of-proc session state servers. You know, if I'm going to be writing my applications on Azure for a web app, am I locked into a certain way to do session state management?
No, I mean, you'll find that the state management is very similar to what you have on Windows Server. And mm-hmm. so, for example, if you look at IIS and running things as a part of a common process there where you potentially can run many, many different applications, we'll be supporting things like that. The kinds of things that are very different are that you don't have persistent storage on box on Windows Azure. Mm. So you have a hard drive. You have the hard drives that are local that you can use for scratch purposes,
right.
But you need to use either Windows Azure storage or SQL Azure to be able to store your persistent state. So things like that are somewhat different.
Mm. Here's a question here, Guy, and this is a question that's actually come up a lot, and we wanted to wait until you got here. This idea of a private cloud. I mean, the cloud is out there, and I can go and buy time on it, and I don't really have to think about the specifics, but would there be a time I would want to have a private cloud?
Well, I think it's important that I think many companies will want to implement the new cloud application model within their own data center and build their own private clouds. And mm-hmm. what we're effectively doing is taking all the learning we're getting from Windows Azure and bringing that back into Windows Server and System Center. Mm-hmm. And then we're also taking all of the new things that we build as a part of Windows Server and bringing them up to Windows Azure, trying to make those both as cohesive as possible. You know, the answer to the question is absolutely. It's really interesting. You'll see us building more sets of management tools and platform features to really make it straightforward for people to implement private clouds. And in fact, I talked about this in the context of System Center, and that during 2010 we'll announce as a part of a beta process, you can think of it as almost a cloud version, a cloud-enabled version of System Center.
And I'm hearing from people that this is almost like someone called it Super Hyper-V, the idea that I'm familiar with how to manage these servers, and I'm familiar with the tools, and I'm comfortable with the tools, and now I can manage these virtual machines in
right.
the cloud.
Yeah, I that's a great analogy because virtualization really is at the center of the technology that we're implementing in Windows Azure. And so thinking about it in that context is exactly right. You know, one of the ways I tend to think about it is the distinction between a cloud environment and a virtualized environment from a pure infrastructure perspective is that in a virtualization environment, the operator determines where to assign the role. So the operator actually places a VM on a given machine.
Right.
And in a cloud environment, what you have is a pool of resources scattered across hundreds or thousands of machines. And it's the actual environment itself that determines that where the role gets run, where the VM gets placed, and then they can be dynamically allocated, and they of course have the properties of elasticity and things like that, mm-hmm. so you can create more of them over time. But it really is it is an extension of the virtualization environment. But again, one of the biggest things about it is that it does bring with it this new application model that developers need to take advantage mm-hmm. of.
One of the gentlemen who I was talking to who helped architect the large cloud slice that we've got over here, this big shipping container, I said, do you think about this as a thousand million, thousands or thousands of little computers? And he's like, no, it's just one or zero.
Yeah, and I guess we're all binary, right? So
yeah, but just the idea that, I mean, we're looking at more computing power in one space than I've ever
right.
been near, and he's like, hey, if this part of this goes out, some number of them will be down. I don't even worry about it.
Well, the container architecture is a great architecture for us. I mean, if you go back, I mean, most people still buy computers to put in their data center one at a time.
Right.
And when you're buying tens or hundreds of thousands of computers, that's just completely impractical. And then we went to a world where we started buying racks, and we would buy racks that are all pre-populated by the hardware OEM, and we'd wheel the rack in and then hook it all up. And now with these containers, essentially, we hook it in, we bring them in, and we connect Ethernet, water, as we talked about, and power to them. And essentially, we have a complete unit that we can run and manage. And one of the key things about that is, even though there are thousands of computers inside that, the system can treat all of those things as a discrete unit, and while at the same time understand the granularity of the servers within it. So, you know, the way Windows Azure works and the way our other properties like Bing work is that if a server fails inside there, it just goes offline. The server just goes offline. The system all continues to run. There's no interruption in service from an end user perspective. And trouble ticket gets written, and next Tuesday a tech comes in and replaces the motherboard on the server. If an entire container goes down, well, we have other containers that can take off. And one of the reasons why we're building multiple data centers is there's always the possibility, you know, it's not something we like to think about, but there's the possibility the data centers can go down. Mm-hmm. And there's things like backhoes that cut cables, and other times you may have a natural event that could bring down a data center. You need to have a secondary data center that's available to fail these things over.
Mm-hmm. But the system's organic enough that as a person who is going to be a consumer of Azure, then I don't think about that. I mean, the machine that I'm on could go down, but as long as things are in persistent storage, my experience is not going to change.
Right, and one of the things we're doing, and again, this is part of the cloud application model, is we're building a set of services to enable developers to build in the service level agreement that's appropriate for that application. Some applications don't really require business continuity, and it's costly. Obviously, if you have the application running in two data centers or multiple data centers, there's incremental cost associated with that. Right. But some apps, it's worth it to do that, and the cost associated with running those applications using a cloud environment is really a fraction of what it would be running it in standard ways.
Yeah. I just want to take a second to remind people that you're watching Channel 9 Live, and if you've got questions, you can tweet them to @CH9Live on Twitter. They'll come up on the big screen. We've got a question here from Andre, who's asking about .NET 4. He really wants to use .NET 4 on Azure. What versions of .NET can we support?
Right now, .NET 3.5 is in Azure. We'll bring .NET 4 into Azure in 2010. It's on our list of things to do. We're actually right now, what we're doing is we're bringing up and implementing a specific roles in Azure that support 2008 R2, and we'll be bringing in .NET 4 at the same time as that.
And this notion of server roles is familiar, because this is the kind of experience that I have when I'm
with
managing
Windows Server.
Windows Server.
And I mean, the idea really is to take those same sort of concepts, but part of what we're doing with Windows Azure and with the cloud environment is making it easy for people to take an operating system environment and a set of application services that people develop and overlay them or aggregate them together. And you know, right now we have that within the Windows Azure environment. We are also doing work where, you know, we're looking at how we can take and enable people to take applications that were built using more standard mechanisms in Windows Server, and with technology like application virtualization, make those available with that same kind of deployment methodology. And so that's something we're working on as well.
And do you have a sense whether it's going to be largely public-facing things are going to find themselves in Azure, or enterprise internal-facing?
I think we'll see both. There's a lot of benefit to doing it for public-facing things, because the cloud obviously provides a surface onto the internet. I sometimes think of the cloud as a satellite in the sky that can distribute things across a wide area. But there's a lot of internal applications that also work beautifully in that same environment. And I think companies will wind up doing both. You know, we are seeing everything from internal applications that are being built this morning I showed a giving application Microsoft IT built that's used only once a year for a few weeks a year. Azure's perfect, because we don't need to have computers dedicated to that. We can just utilize the resources as the application requires it. That's an internal app, but you know, then we saw others like Kelly Blue Book, which is very much an external-facing web property.
A lot of questions coming in on Twitter here. We've got a question from Brian Henderson about a test simulator. You know, with an Azure application, there's that confidence that it will scale, but I still want to see it happen.
And those are the sorts of things we're working on. I showed how in Visual Studio we're doing a whole set of things around testing and test. And one of the features actually in Visual Studio is the ability to do test simulation, and you'll be able to do that against the Windows Azure environment. Another thing we're working on, which I think is pretty interesting, is ways to be able to monitor applications and enable developers to know that their application is fully functioning. And again, that's about how you can help to enforce that service level agreement.
Mm-hmm. And actually, speaking of service level agreements, there are other agreements that one has to think about. Like, here's a question from Activa, who's saying about I should have just scrolled by. The question was about how can I know that my data that's in Azure is not being used inappropriately? I've got privacy concerns.
Right, sure. When I talk about the cloud, I often talk about the fact that it's still an evolving environment. It's still immature in a number of senses. You know, we're very confident about the structure of the way we run these data centers and the security attributes of the data center. One of the things that's interesting is as we've brought up Exchange and SharePoint and brought a large number of customers that have major security concerns mm-hmm. onto that environment, one of the concerns we hear from customers all the time is, how do I know it's secure? And you know what we do with that with these big customers is we take them out to our data centers.
Yeah.
And anytime when they see our data centers and they see the security procedures we put in place, they always come back and go, wow, this is at least as secure, generally more secure than the environment we run, and we could learn a lot from Microsoft. That said, I do think the concern about enabling users and businesses to have data that is actually opaque to anyone else is a good one.
Yeah.
And so one of the things you'll see in the future is us enabling encryption of data where Microsoft doesn't hold the keys. The keys are held by the end company, and that's a direction we'll head in. We didn't really talk specifically about that today.
Sure.
And the specific timing of it, I'm not sure, but it's clearly an area where we have technology. We know we can make it work. It's just a question of getting it done.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like something people will be interested around areas in compliance and things mm-hmm. like that. Here's a question here about session affinity for web applications. Sometimes people write their applications such that they expect a user to return to the same place.
Right. And yeah, I'm pretty sure that we have that capability in Windows Azure, but that's one of the things that would need to be looked at in a specific talk here.
Sure, and I can go and find those things out for us here on Channel 9 Live and get those answers to you. And again, you can tweet your questions at CH9Live at Microsoft PDC, and we'll go ahead and put those up on the big board. Here's a question that's actually been sitting here for a while, but how does Azure differentiate itself from other competitors? I mean, there's a lot of clouds. There's the big obvious ones, but then there's also little clouds out there.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. One is that what we've done with Windows Azure is really focus on enabling developers to easily take advantage of and leverage their skills building .NET and Windows Server applications. Mm-hmm. That's obviously a really key thing. You know, IDC numbers show that 75% of all servers that were purchased last year are running Windows Server. So it is the predominant environment that exists out in the world for people building server applications and running their environment. And what we've done is we've enabled customers to take all of those investments forward with Windows Azure. That's one of the key things we've done. You know, I think the other big area where Microsoft is differentiating ourselves is the breadth of the kind of investment we make. Mm-hmm. You know, we are a platform company. That is one of the core things we do. And if you look at what we're doing with SQL Azure as an example and App Fabric, which I announced today, a new app server. The breadth of the set of services that we're making available, you know, frankly, I think it's broader than anything else that exists out there. And the investment Microsoft is making is really an unmatched one in the industry. So I think those are the sorts of things that differentiate it. And you know, and the other thing I'll say is that in addition to what we're doing with Windows Azure, we're going to be focusing on taking all of that learning and everything we do, bringing it back into Windows Server, into SQL Server, into System Center, enabling customers to build their own private clouds, mm-hmm. and having symmetry between their on-premises data centers and Windows Azure, but then also enabling our hosting partners, our many thousands of hosting partners around the world, to build their own cloud environment. Mm-hmm. And frankly, you know, I think about, you say, okay, there's a few big ones. There's us, Google, Amazon, et cetera. We're quite differentiated with them because of our history with Windows Server and .NET. You know, but there are thousands of hosting providers around the world that run Windows Server, and we want to enable them to build their own clouds.
So those clouds will look like
they'll look like our clouds.
Look like our clouds. Now, and a lot of people are talking about Twitter. They're saying things like, you know, OMG, WordPress on Azure. I just heard someone said, I can't believe that I heard that the word PHP said at a Microsoft conference.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Why are people so surprised?
I'm actually surprised people are surprised. We've been talking about and have been supporting PHP in Windows Server for some time. And in fact, with Windows Server 2008, we really focused on making the Windows Server support for PHP world class. Mm-hmm. Before 2008, you know, there were definitely advantages to running PHP on Linux, but we've really focused on making the performance characteristics and the manageability characteristics of PHP to be at least as good as Linux, and we think in some ways better, being mm-hmm. able to take advantage of things like PowerShell and things like that in that environment. So it was a natural for us to want to bring that into the Windows Azure environment. We're just taking the investments we've already made forward.
You know, as an employee and as a stockholder, but also as a user of Windows, I kind of look at this and I feel like there's almost like And I'm speaking only for myself as an individual. It's like a resurgence of kind of, hey, it's Windows, stupid. Like, it's all about Windows, right? Is this kind of a resurgence of the platform?
I think it's always been surging. But the thing about this is we're sitting back and saying, look, there's all these different developers that are building different kinds of applications using different models. And we just want to be open and support all of them and do as great a job as we possibly can across it. We'll try and do the best possible job in building .NET, make .NET the premier environment for anyone to build any application. Mm-hmm. But if you want to use Java or you want to use PHP or a different environment, we certainly want to support that in a world-class way.
We've got more questions coming in on Twitter. Again, you can send your questions to @CH9Live. I have a question here from Stuart Island, who wants to know that he's an IT pro, and what should he be thinking about? I mean, is this a good thing for an IT pro?
Yeah, I think it is. I think what IT pros will be able to do is it's an area where they can expand how companies are building applications. You know, IT pros will still be involved in managing their applications, running the operation, and managing the overall environment. We showed this morning a little taste of how System Center will expand out and allow you to monitor and manage not just your on-premises environment, but also the Windows Azure environment. You know, I think, you know, what happens all the time is new technologies come along and people go, oh my gosh, what is this going to mean for me and for my job? And what we find again and again and again is that as these new technologies are incorporated into the way people do business, people's expectations of what they want to do increases. Mm-hmm. So people are able to write applications faster, they're able to deploy them faster, run them more effectively. There are still huge opportunities for everybody to help drive this forward within their company.
Mm-hmm. Another question from Twitter from Cloud Architect talking about SQL Azure scaling. You know.
Yeah, SQL Azure is a very cool thing. Let me talk a little bit about what we've done with SQL Azure. The thing that's different that enables us to get incredible scale in SQL Azure is that it is inherently a segmented architecture. Mm-hmm. So that basically what you do as a developer is you break up your application data, you sort of shred your application data into different compartments that are about, today they're 10 gigabytes, that number
right.
will grow
is that
somewhat.
What they call sharding?
They're sharding, okay. Right. And that number will grow somewhat over time. But fundamentally, by having this segmented architecture, your application can scale out essentially infinitely. And what we're doing with SQL Azure is we're running it on thousands of computers across multiple data centers now.
Right.
And we manage multiple copies of your data. We manage the existence of your database across these different data centers, all totally transparently to you. From your perspective, you're just saying create database, create table,
right.
update, insert, etc. And it's just SQL Server from every perspective you have as a developer. But from a manageability perspective, understanding exactly how those databases are structured, what disks they're placed on, all of that is transparent to you. I actually think that's a key example of how the cloud application model is very different than the traditional application models.
So this limitation that we're talking about, there's the basic, which is a gig, and then there's the business level, which
is 10 gigs.
That's really the only limitation.
That's really the only limitation. As I said, that number will wind up going up somewhat over time, and we will be, over time, providing more services to make that more seamless to the developer.
Right.
But fundamentally, the idea that when you think about your application, that it can scale out essentially infinitely and you segment your data as appropriately is really an important part about how I think the next generation of data-oriented applications will be built.
And if you're just joining us, it sucks for you because you've missed 25 minutes of talking with Bob Muglia. And you can Twitter your questions at @CH9Live. We have about 5 minutes left of Bob's time talking about Azure and some of the cool stuff that's going on here at Microsoft PDC in Los Angeles. Now, wasn't there something that you said in the keynote about kind of five generations of computing?
I like to think about the fact that, you know, I guess I've been around for a while. So I look back and I remember all of these programming models and application models that have existed. You know, when I first was learning in computer science classes, you know, it was all the mainframe or monolithic programming model. That's what people used.
Right.
And, you know, my first job at Microsoft was program manager for SQL Server. And in January of 1988, I was in the job for less than 2 weeks. And we introduced, with SQL Server, the client-server programming model.
Right.
You know, then in 1995, there was the web programming model that became very popular. You know, in about 2000, the web services or SOA application model came on board. And now there's this whole new application model with the cloud where we build upon the understandings and applications that people have created with these previous generations, but also introduce these new services, these new capabilities, that these new attributes that developers will want to and have the ability to take advantage of.
Because it sounds like, from what I'm understanding, that you have enabled all of those, even the oldest model. You could treat the cloud like a mainframe, you could treat the cloud like a client server, but really to take full advantage of it, you're going to want to think about...
To some extent. I mean, there are limitations having to do with things like distance. I mean, a client-server application might be written in a way where there's an expectation that the client and the server are co-located in the same LAN,
right,
in which case the latencies associated with running it over the internet may not enable a good user experience. So mm-hmm. there's no guarantee that an application that was written for an earlier generation of application model will be able to seamlessly move forward to the future. But what we're trying to do is provide developers with the services to be able to take as much as they possibly can forward. And in many cases, it really does just work.
Yeah. And I understand that I can be as I was talking to Steve Marks a little bit earlier, a technical strategist for Azure. He was saying that I can be as interested in the inner workings as I want or not.
Right.
And I thought that was really interesting. I thought that we would kind of be on this layer and be unable to introspect into it. And he says you can...
No, we're trying to enable developers to see it in as much as we can to the guts of the system so they can get into and do low-level debugging and things like that. And the same token, for many developers, that won't be necessary. And they'll be able to just use these sets of services as abstract
right.
services.
Yeah, I thought a great example that he gave was that one kind of developer might put their app up there. They may look, oh, it's running a little hot. And they say, I need three more instances, and that's it, and that's their experience.
Right, that's right. And another developer might say, well, why is it running hot? Are there places where I can do some optimization? Yes, there is. Oh, gee, now I'm able to run it only with two instances or something.
Exactly. And then they get to actually look at how much money that's costing.
Right,
those
and they can save
decisions.
Money potentially as well. I mean, that's always been true because people have had to buy computers mm-hmm. to be able to do this. It's just been more opaque to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the idea that it's really going to come down to dollars and cents.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how many people spend a lot of time trying to squeak that last penny out of what's going on Azure. We're seeing a lot of questions about different applications that someone might want to run in the cloud. Here's a question from Twitter from Flynn, who wants to know if he can run Team Foundation Server in the cloud.
Well, that's one of the you know, I talked about Microsoft applications in my keynote that we are bringing to the cloud, applications like SharePoint, Exchange, and Dynamics. We recently announced that next year we'd be entering beta on a version of System Center to manage desktops in the cloud. And for developers, we very much have Team Foundation Server on our radar screen. We have not made any specific announcements. And the honest-to-gosh truth is that the guy that runs that team, Brian Harry, mm-hmm. Who's out of North Carolina, he's very busy with that team getting Visual Studio 2010 and TFS done for 2010 right now.
Yeah.
But we've already had conversations about what would it mean for us to run this in a cloud environment. There are some hosters that run TFS today.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one option people have. But you can certainly can expect to see us heading in that direction in the future.
So if I'm a Microsoft developer and I want to learn more about this, I can go to Microsoft.com/Azure.
Right.
And I can sign up and start playing
in the
cloud
immediately. You can start using these sets of services immediately. They're available now for people. We'll go into our production state starting at the beginning of next year. But right now the services are available for anyone to use. They're free to use from now through the end of January. Starting in January, we'll present people with a bill,
mm-hmm.
but you know, we'll give you all the line items so you can see what it would have cost you. Then we'll zero it out.
Very nice.
That's true until January 31st, and then we'll start charging you.
Very cool. Very cool. So I think I got to think about a bunch of different applications. I was talking to the ICANN as cheeseburger guy.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of what can I put in the cloud that could be the next big thing on the internet.
Hey, you could be you.
Hey, and you know, we've only got a couple more seconds while you're here, but when you're at the kind of the highest levels of power at Microsoft, do you hang out with like the other presidents and stuff? Do you see each other at Starbucks?
Well, you know, we do, it's a fairly small community, so we definitely do see each other, and we definitely do hang out together sometimes. I mean, I've had like Stephen Elop over at my house a few times, and
yeah.
I've been over to his house, and it's fun to, you know, it's fun to chat with these guys and get their perspective. Frankly, there's a lot I can learn from the other senior leaders at Microsoft because they've had very different experiences that I've had, and it's sometimes fun just really hearing their perspective because it's a ton I can learn.
Well, it's been great having you on Channel 9 Live, and I appreciate your perspective and you letting me
great.
Talk to you.
Great. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you all very much. Thanks.